From the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield.
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
And Adam Hill.
Oh, man. Hey.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
On ESPN Las Vegas.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company. Steve Cofield. Adam Hill. RE in for Chrissy today. Star-studded show. We'll talk to Caleb Herring in just a little bit. Marvin Menzies, UNLV basketball coach, will be in with us in less than 60 minutes. But busy afternoon. Get into some NFL. Get into some UFC. We got breaking news, right, in UFC. So what was the – we didn't talk about any of the fights because of the brawl at UFC 229 at the T. One of the crazy fights was Derek Lewis against a big Russian heavyweight. Lewis comes on mic and talks about his junk being all hot because I guess he dropped his pants, right?
Yeah.
So then the scuttlebutt yesterday was, hey, they're going to get Lewis right back in there. Let's get him in a fight. So it was confirmed this afternoon. He's now going to challenge Derek Lewis, who's, you know, 6'3", 280, probably cuts to 260. Well, we know he cuts to 265. He's probably 280 in between fights. He's right back in there in like less than a month.
Yeah, rushing him back in and taking advantage of one of the, you know, most star-making moments you're going to see with that performance the other night, UFC 229. Not only did he have the unbelievable post-fight interview that everybody's talking about, but he also had a spectacular victory. He's a guy who, you look at his resume, you kind of think of him as a jokester because his social media is so funny, his interviews are hilarious, but you look on there, he only lost one time in the UFC. The guy's on an incredible run, and now he's going to get his big shot. He fights Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight title next month. They're getting him back in there. I question it for a lot of reasons. One, he got hit a lot. It was one of the biggest... he was on the wrong side of one of the biggest strike differentials of all time of anybody that won a fight. He got hit a lot before getting a spectacular knockout in the final minute of the fight to save himself from losing that fight. He clearly had an eye issue from getting poked a bunch. He also talked after the fight about how he knows that to take the next step in his career, he has to actually do cardio because he can't last three full rounds, and they're going to put him in a five-round fight against one of the best cardio machines in the entire heavyweight division. So
why is it now that he's learning that? He's essentially the Black Roy Nelson.
Yeah. He's known
much better shape.
Well, he's said it a lot of times.
I would do it.
I know. He doesn't care. He keeps winning.
Well, he better do it against Cormier. But how's he going to do it? Like you said, how's he going to do it on 3 weeks?
I don't know.
3 weeks notice.
He's not going to. He's probably not going to train.
All right. One of the other wacky things that came out of UFC 229, boy, the news cycle as the press conference was going on, I thought was just really shoddy. I think we mentioned this yesterday. Dana White is going 1,000 miles an hour, especially after an event like that. And he's not always the best source of what's actually happening around the event. So he threw out a line, which I thought was really weird, that even the governor ran out of the building, Governor Sandoval. And I saw ESPN, a PR guy, was like, wow, that's really bad. And I just thought to myself, there's no way he ran out of the building. Now, I will tell you, for a second, I was like, wow, I'm really split on where I'm going to vote. Do I go Dem or Repub in the gubernatorial election? And I was this close to saying, you know what? I got to go Sisolak because I don't believe as a Democrat he would run out of the building all scared because Sandoval did. But now, as it turns out, now it's wide open again for me. I can vote for Laxalt as a Repub, as a GOP.
Well, what's
the truth on this whole thing?
So the other thing, when you mentioned that, you know, Dana, sometimes there's a lot going on and he just says, like, I think he also a lot of times says things for effect and doesn't necessarily think people are going to check it out. Like, the other night he said three people were arrested. They weren't. Now, everybody is gone with it just because he said it, but nobody was arrested. It was all people that were detained. But I think sometimes you think you're not going to check. And when he said that the governor went running out of the building, so that is going to have an impact on how the Nevada Athletic Commission deals with this situation, since the governor is in charge of the Nevada Athletic Commission, certainly we decided we should probably reach out and see what the governor has to say if he ran out of the building.
Oh, you did check on it?
Yeah.
So was Governor Sandoval running scared?
Not according to his spokeswoman. Mary Sarah Kinner, the spokeswoman for Governor Sandoval, disputed the fact that the governor, quote, ran out of the building. She said he left normally with all the other patrons and even stopped to talk to some police officers on the way out.
He didn't run.
Not according to them. Now, maybe he did.
Grab Metro and put him in front?
Human shield?
Yeah,
maybe.
Like Chris Christie might do?
Yeah, maybe.
Former governor of New Jersey?
Now, it's possible.
Who's a big tough guy?
It's possible that the governor did run.
Fat tough guy.
And that he doesn't like this characterization of him running from the building.
Can
and
maybe you guys
now,
get a video?
Nobody has seen video of where he was and how he got out.
No one knows where he was.
I'm not sure where
he was.
You
don't have any sources to at least know where he was seated, and then you can hunt down some video?
His spokeswoman declined further comment.
No. You don't have any sources. You must be able to get a hold of the seating chart.
Oh, where he was exactly sitting, and
right.
Then try to get the overhead view?
Don't the celebrities generally sit on the opposite side of the media? The fight spilled over to the media side, so he would have been on the other side of the cage.
Well, sure, the celebrities sit there.
He's not a celebrity?
I don't think so. More dignitary?
Really?
I think so. Well, the reason they sit where they do is the reason they put the
let's have a fight where these guys sit, where these women sit. Well, celebrity or dignitary?
No, the reason they put them where they put them is because they're caught on camera a lot, and they want, you know, people like Matt Damon and Chris Pratt and Anthony Kiedis is always right there.
So the national audience probably doesn't care.
I doubt they do.
Who Governor Sandoval is?
Doubtful. Maybe. It's possible.
Can I ask a quick question about apparel, attire on governors and gubernatorial candidates?
Okay.
I saw Laxalt at the UNLV game, and he's big on the jeans with a tucked-in shirt.
It's awful.
It's jeans and a plaid shirt.
Yeah, I hate that.
Well, you got a plaid shirt on.
I do. Not tucked in.
And you have jeans!
I do.
You like to blouse it. Like, kind of just have it untucked.
I would prefer that. But I only have a colored shirt on because I actually had to do video stuff today, and I wore a jacket over it.
My worry is, if I wear the jeans and I tuck it in, I go Laxalt style, then I might be showing off a fup.
Yeah.
If you know what that is, a fupa.
Yeah, I understand.
There's kind of that band of fat, like, sort of below your stomach and above your groin.
I just don't think it looks right in general.
And then I feel like you're wearing, then you've got mom jeans on. Like, you're looking a bit hippie. There's the stuff. Like, at that point, you're the Philly fanatic or, like, a gritty.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Trying to do the belly bump.
Yeah, so I don't have to get a determination.
But I think that it looks wrong. I think that the classier folk like to tuck it in because they just think you're supposed to tuck your shirts in. I just don't think it looks right. When I see people doing that, I don't think it looks right. Even those that are in shape properly.
Are you not governor material if you leave it untucked?
Well, I think you are, but maybe the average person doesn't like to see that.
Would you withhold a vote from someone who overly tucks?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right? That's how Adam Hill, after years of listening to Adam Hill, he may decide his vote on tucked or untucked.
Sure.
Somehow I think you have a stronger allegiance.
Well, I feel dumb now because I could have really done some extra show research because I had to cut one of my videos short today because Laxalt was coming in studio after me. So they had to, prepare for...
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Ah, you should have stuck around.
I should have stayed
around to research.
See how he went with the tuck or untuck.
No, I think he's really strong on the tucked in the jeans. I think that's his look.
Can I go...
I think it's sort of a... It's sort of a Northern Nevada rancher look.
Okay.
I think that's what he's going for.
Can I throw another fashion question in since we're doing just fashion report today on the show? I got very confused today doing video. I usually go sport coat over like plain t-shirt. Not t-shirt, but like a nicer, just plain shirt. Today I went collared shirt, and I didn't really know what to do with my collar. As far as like, do you put the collar on the outside of the jacket? Do you put the jacket kind of over the collar? I don't know what to do.
I'm not the guy to ask. I am not a jacket guy.
But I literally, because I was sitting there waiting to start the broadcast, and I'm looking on camera. I'm like, I don't know what looks proper. I don't know what you're supposed to do here. I had no clue.
So as you can tell, This is very important talk. It is. But it's basically just putting off what is probably going to be an explosion.
Got an update. Tucked. He was tucked.
Sandoval was tucked.
No, Laxalt.
Laxalt was tucked today.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm telling you, that's his look. As you'll notice, I am dressed like a 14-year-old. Or you know what I'm thinking? Let's go back and look up. Was it in Big or was it in Bosom Buddies? I feel like this is a Tom Hanks look.
No, I think what do you really look like right now? You look like Babe Ruth's grandson.
With a red beard though.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got the backward hat, the Yankees jersey just undone because you can't button it because you can't get it around.
No, I can button it, but okay. it's this is a big one. But white pinstripes are not slimming.
Yeah.
So I choose to leave it open as if you can't see my stomach in a jersey underneath it. I'm actually, the Yankees were so bad last night, and this is the explosion I'm kind of holding off on. You know what? We got to go to break. I'll explode on the way back.
Minimum. It's Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota Studios.
Hauschka's got plenty of leg. It is up, and it is good. It is good, and the Buffalo Bills win it. They knock off the Tennessee Titans. Steven Hauschka, a 46-yarder. The Bills win it 13-12. House money indeed.
Wow. The Bills make me want to shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and shout. Throw your hands
2 days later, still euphoric over the Bills' victory with that. Can you do that noise?
Ho! Ho! I can't. It's like a bark?
I don't know.
Oh,
it's a weird one. No? That's like a puppy bark. A
bird squawking?
That was weird. I'm doing everything I can today to goose Fraba from anger management, the Yankee game last night. So, first of all, nice job by the Dodgers. I didn't think they'd get to the NLCS, so I was wrong. Great job by the Astros. I did expect the Astros to get to the ALCS, and I expect the Astros to win the World Series because the Astros are the best organization in baseball. And the Yankees should be ashamed of what they'd allowed the Astros to do here. The Astros are a model around baseball. They are an evil empire. Their owner's worth $3 billion. They're in a top 10 market, fourth biggest city by population, 10th biggest market overall. So they're an evil empire. They've got lots of money and a giant market. And they did what the Yankees and Red Sox do in good times. Red Sox are close. Red Sox are right there. But what you do is you build from within, and then when you need to go buy to fortify weaknesses, you do it. And the fact that, one, the Yankees, who lost last night 1,000-1 and had to pitch a catcher, just horrific. Second time in the history of the postseason, Major League Baseball, a position player pitched. Awful. The Yankees and the Red Sox sat there, and I still think the Dodgers are going to be in the crosshairs eventually. These teams sat there while the Astros went and bought Justin Verlander, the Astros went and bought Gerrit Cole, and the Astros went and bought Roberto Osuna. And that's what you do. And that's why they're going to win a second straight World Series, because they bought a number one and two starter, and they bought a closer when they needed it. And the Red Sox are very good, but I think we're going to find out that the Red Sox are short a starter or two because David Price is not reliable. And we're going to find out if the Dodgers can win it with the same plan they employed last year, which is a deep pitching staff but one hammer at the top. And we know the Yankees. Last night is what I've been saying all year long, which is kind of amazing. The Yankees won 100 games, but they just don't have the top-line pitching to beat the best teams in baseball. They don't.
You're sure that the Astros are going to win?
Yes.
Wow. Guarantee?
Virtual. Virtual? Virtual. Yes.
Can I get the field?
No. Astros move to the favorite. They're plus 225 to win the World Series. I wouldn't bet that. Nothing's a guarantee. I mean, baseball wacky things happen, but when you can roll out the kind of pitchers the Astros have, and the one thing they didn't have, and actually Rondon was doing a decent job. He fell off, and he actually wasn't on the roster. I'm correct on that, right, for the ALDS, but he may be back. The one thing they needed was a closer, and the Jays, because of Osuna's problems, gave him away.
Yeah.
Although other teams could have blocked it. Could have stepped in and stopped it.
I think there was other teams that were concerned about situation
mm-hmm.
that looked at it and said, we don't want to. And Houston dealt with it. And by the way, we've talked about these things before. Houston had a whole lot of backlash when they got him,
mm-hmm.
and it lasted like 2 days.
Right. And so did the Yankees when they got Chapman. And you don't think the Red Sox could deal with it?
Yeah. I think they would have taken heat for 2 or 3 days, and then he'd get, you know, 2 saves and 2 opportunities, and people would move on.
The Astros are awesome. They built that lineup through their system. They even survived the gaffe of being cheap asses with Chris Bryant and taking Mark Appel instead. That's how good they've been. And then when they needed to go and buy players, they did it. Verlander was available to everyone.
Yeah. Now, I think the claim that other teams would make, although it's foolish because we've seen they don't really care how much money's being spent, is that the Astros were absolutely in a position to spend because they spent nothing for 4 years and then had no payroll at all when they added these guys. That's, I'm sure that's what other teams would counter with.
The Yankees and Red Sox would counter right. with, and the Dodgers, we had no money.
Well, how I started that Stop. Was, it's it would be completely foolish,
right.
and nobody should believe it, but I think that's what they would say. Well, how much more do you want us to add? I don't know. You've added countless amount of money with bringing in other guys that weren't starting pitchers that are reliable and can get you dominant wins in the postseason.
Last night, you believe Severino gaffed and started too late, warm-ups? He didn't realize the game was at 7:40. Tonight's game is at 8:07.
Is that was the narrative out there?
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. Boone had to answer it after the game. I saw John Flaherty, Yankee color voice, was like, man, I don't believe it. Sorry. I think he got confused. They didn't think he was ready to go. Beginning of the game. He started warming up 8 minutes before the first pitch.
It's possible. I mean, it's insane. I don't know if that's on him or on... There's got to be somebody whose job it is to say, hey, 25 minutes to game time or, you know, 15 minutes to first pitch, whatever it is.
God.
Somebody's got to be in charge of that.
Trying to stay calm. I mean, last night I got to read tweets. Hashtag Brocktober. Brock Holtz. It's terrible this year.
You didn't like
the
story?
It's for the cycle.
You didn't like the story of Brock Holt going for the cycle? First one ever?
No, I didn't. No. No. Not at all.
It's a good story.
I saw another stupid story last night. Did you see at one point in the game, one of the Yankee fans dropped his cell phone down the right field line?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, kind of where the wall gets a little bit high right. down the close to the foul pole.
Right.
And they're like, Mookie Betts picked it up and gave it to him. What a great guy. So then I'm seeing, I see some comments on Twitter. I bet you'll still boo him. Yeah, they will.
Why wouldn't
what,
they?
What, like, what human being wouldn't just, what are you going to do in front of millions of people watching on TV in a stadium of 55,000? Imagine.
Smash
what,
the phone?
Yeah, what would you and I do?
Step
just
on
walk
it?
Over and step on it or just take it and throw it into the bleachers?
I know that's what Gritty would do.
That's a good point. Gritty would do that.
He would definitely do that.
I love patting someone on the back for acting like a human being.
That's yeah. He didn't jump on the train track to save a kid that was about to get run over. He just gave somebody's cell phone back.
Right?
And you're right. Gave it back on camera in front of millions of people as if he could have just pocketed it and be like, oh, I got a new phone.
What a swell guy. You know, Dewey Evans, he would have thrown that. He had a great arm. He would have thrown it out of the stadium.
Yeah, why not? No, he wouldn't. Nobody would. Like, okay, giving it back, that's fine. If you give it to like an usher to give back to him, is that still a kind act? It's just what you're supposed to do.
Here comes Mo Vaughn running down the line. Oh, with a knee on the phone. He broke it. This is a new era member of the Red Sox.
So stupid.
Mookie's a great guy.
So dumb. If he was a great guy, he would have like taken a selfie and given it to the guy and like so he could have a keepsake.
So 2-1 Red Sox lead, two of America's most hated teams. And tonight could be like we don't have enough in terms of storylines. Yankees fans freaking out, Red Sox fans really enjoying things. And now we're going to get Angel Hernandez behind the plate. After
oh
what? Did you watch some of the highlights last night? Because I know
disaster.
We were tracking Monday Night Football at Pizza Rock.
Yeah. Just missed call after missed call, going to replay, fixing his mistakes.
He is... Basically, he's young Joe West. But he's got the same temperament. He looks to fight all the time with players and managers. He's not good. And what do you always say about officials? If they get really pissed off and they tee you up, what probably happened?
they were wrong about the call.
And they're getting called out, and they're self-conscious, so they're getting really worked up.
Yeah. When you make the right call, you're assertive about it, and you're like, I know what was in there. And then you hear the chirping, and you're like, just keep yelling. I was right. But when you're wrong, it just takes over your whole body. It's like a, oh, I can't believe I just missed that. And then somebody yells, and you're like, I know. I got to, all right, you're out of here. Like, that's how it goes. You see it all the time.
Is that how? I don't think does the I know come in?
Yes, I think so.
All right, you're out.
Internally, yes. When you have a call right, you can easily just take in all the nonsense. And when you get it wrong, you're on tilt.
He's a bad umpire.
He's awful.
I heard that it was Richard Justice was doing a spot online. He's a Houston area guy. I think he's MLB.com. And he was saying, yeah, you know what? Clubhouses, most of the players like him. Think he's a good ump. So I guess I'll take him on his word. I don't know. I saw Paul LaDuca flipping out. The former catcher with the Mets and Dodgers said he's awful. I saw other people saying, how the hell is this guy still around? And he's rewarded after three missed calls. Now, here's the thing. He's rewarded by getting home plate tonight. Watch the replays. Three plays at first. The first one was bang, bang. It wasn't an easy call. All right. You know what? Sometimes you miss them. So you go to replay. It fixes it. The next two were, one, the first baseman's foot is off the bag. He's doing one of those long stretches and has to go down to the ground. His foot's off the bag. And the other one was, I mean, I don't even know how to quantify it. The ball was clearly in the glove as the guy's foot is in the air. I mean, it got to the glove early. Like, not a bang, bang.
But that also goes along with, like, you're going to be frustrated and more apt or more quick to kick somebody out when you got a wrong call. I think you're also more likely to make another wrong call because you start, like, second-guessing and doubting yourself. You get overturned by replay. Now you're, like, thinking about it too much on the next call. Like, I totally think those things build up. But you can't allow that to happen. You've got to be a good umpire, and he never has been a good umpire. I think Peter Gammons last night was just destroying him on Twitter. Just destroying him. Like, I think one of the things that he said, and I'd have to go back and look at this, I think he said something to the effect of, baseball talks about wanting to make games shorter, and yet they put Angel Hernandez out there to miss calls over and over again, and you know it's going to happen, and it's going to stretch out the game. Like, he was just not happy that he even got the assignment. Although, you know, Peter Gammons is just cheering for the Red Sox anyway. So.
No! He's objective. Cut it out. Yes, his tweet last night was, the commissioner's office cannot complain about pace of game and run Angel Hernandez out there in October. Simple as that.
It's true.
Well, watch tonight. Watch. Very emotional spot. It's Porcello and CC Sabathia. And CC is one. He will, every once in a while, he'll bitch about a call. He'll bitch about a, ball strike, and we saw what he did at the end of the season, right? Little beanball back and forth, and then he pointed at the dugout, and he's like, let's go. Come on. Let's go. So imagine Angel Hernandez, not feeling so confident after last night and being mocked universally across baseball, all amped up going to the game tonight. First showdown between he and CC. Look out.
Yeah.
Which, this is a ridiculous narrative. You're an umpire.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to look out for anything.
Shouldn't even know who you are.
It's time for the Big Effin' Deal. Brought to you by Jackson's Bar and Grill.
All right, I got my rage out. That wasn't too bad, right?
Not too bad.
Pretty reserved.
Compared to what I was expecting, sure.
Yeah.
But it's still, I think there's still a little bit of hope, so it's not quite bubbling over the top yet.
Plus, I've kind of toned down the whole thing because it is annoying to fans of other baseball teams. You know, the 24 that can't spend $200 million. Of course, 22 of the other 24 can spend $150, but they lie. And we know there's 80 evil umpires now, so if you're a fan of the Cubs, the White Sox, when they choose to spend again, the Astros, the Phillies, the Red Sox, the Nats, the Yankees, the Mets, but, Mets have, they're going to lean on the freaking Bernie Madoff crutch forever. Angels, Dodgers, Giants, I think that's more than eight. All have the potential to be, Seattle, too. Evil Empires, and Houston, so it's like 12.
Tigers?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Ilitch's money. So I know he's dead, but I don't know what happened You know, is this a Polad situation where the kids are like, yeah, like Dad said, we just don't have the money. We're only worth $6 billion.
Well, they had to give away all those pizzas, too, last year.
What promotion was that?
I don't know.
Was UMBC, right?
Yeah, 16 over 1. Yeah. So all the free pizza they gave away for UMBC winning, that was free agents.
So that explains why the whole year I was like, I don't know anyone on the Tigers. Who are these guys?
Yeah.
I don't know anyone.
All the money went to free pizzas. Thanks, UMBC.
You ruined the Tigers season.
Yeah.
All right. Big effing deal. If you haven't heard it, basically it comes down to, that's a big effing deal or big effing deal, right?
It's good.
This one is going to be, I hope, explosive. So Adam Hill's covering UFC over the weekend at the T. The guy who is the king of Las Vegas sports media from a, you know, culture and sights social media standpoint is Sherman Oaks, California's own Arash Markazi. And he's not from here, but he somehow, as an ESPN LA guy, has scooped up Sin City in Vegas as part of his territory. He's such a beast on Twitter that the other day, and this is nothing against him, he's retired, the former gossip and scene king of Las Vegas, Norm, tweeted something out, actually retweeted an Arash tweet. There was a mistake in it on Norm's part, and Norm's like, wow, Arash is so all over Vegas, I just assumed. It was a picture of the LA football stadium versus Vegas football stadium. Norm thought it was the Vegas football stadium. So even Norm is like, rubber stamp, Arash, he's the guy.
If Arash tweets something, it's happening in Vegas.
We had controversy about a month ago. Adam Hill is a superstar in this town.
True.
And he's a big fellow who likes to eat, and he's a late-night guy. He hits all the bars. He should have multiple sandwiches and drinks. Frankly, I don't know, Italian dinners named after him.
Yeah. I would like a nice pasta dish.
A pasta dish would be a crowning achievement.
Oh.
What do you have? Nothing. You've got nothing.
Nothing. However, I will say it is partly my fault because I do get cold feet because I get nervous that people aren't going to like it or that it's going to be the wrong thing. So it's been proposed, but I freak out. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure.
So Adam is sandwichless. One of our buddies locally, Pizza Joint, they're like, yeah, we'll get you something to rush. Like, jumps?
Yeah.
Adam.
Yeah.
On a menu item. Like, what is going on here? It turned into a controversy for a couple of weeks. A lot of bickering. Then we look up on social media.
Now, this one hurts.
I knew it would.
And I'll tell you why. Go ahead. I'm getting ahead of myself. But who named a sandwich after him now?
One of the chefs at T-Mobile decided to come up with the Arash Markazi sandwich.
Yeah.
It's chicken tenders. This insults me, too, because I know where these sandwiches come from, the genesis. It's the Arash Markazi sandwich. Chicken tenders, cheddar cheese, slaw, wasabi mayo, honey mustard on a beautiful-looking, I'll call it a torpedo roll.
Okay.
It looks cool. Delicious. It looks messy. There's some spice in there. Come on. This is a beautiful sandwich. He's got his own sandwich!
And where is this?
At T-Mobile.
Now, what are the two major tenants of T-Mobile Arena?
Well, I don't think you're around these people very often. Vegas Golden Knights and UFC. Uh-oh. Look at the deep breathing.
It's literally my two beats.
It is your two beats.
I had to have spent more time there than anyone. This is... He flies in like one event a month, maybe.
Yep.
This is infuriating.
And now he's got his own sandwich. And you have nothing.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
They don't even have... They should sell gummy bears. It should be the Adam Hill gummy bears. That stupid gummy bear thing you did all last year. You got nothing out of it.
The arena should be named after me. It should be my arena. I don't even have a sandwich. He's got a sandwich.
The Adam Hill Center?
Yeah.
I think I might be asking for too much. A sandwich, though?
Adam Hill Court at T-Mobile Arena?
Oh, you want the court? You want the ice?
The ice. The Adam Hill Rink. And nothing. And nothing. And Listen, I will admit.
Did you talk to people at T-Mobile? Were you like...
No, I talked to Arash, and I said, first of all, if you looked at the photo that I posted of him the other day, with just the obnoxious smile on his face, showing off his dumb sandwich, which I say dumb sandwich, I'm sure it's delicious.
No, you're not jealous.
And the look, just the pure joy on his face was infuriating in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really let him know.
You know, he was tweeting with me today behind the scenes, and he said, I love it. I swear, Adam was the first person I thought of when they told me. Ha! He looks so happy to have a sandwich.
I've never seen anyone happier.
Smug.
And it was, I don't even think he was that happy about the sandwich. He was just happy to show it to me. Just dig the knife deeper. What a jerk. What an absolute jerk he is. And I will tell you right now, I will not take their seconds, because I screamed at him and out of disgust of how did you get a sandwich?
I have sources at the T, and they were like, listen, we're sorry to Adam, and they're like, we're going to come up with something for you.
Yeah. They said, you know what? Oversight. Obviously, we should have something about you. What should we make? Like, what should be on this? And I said outright, absolutely not. It is too late. You do not give Arash Markazi a sandwich before me. It is my building.
All right, official determination around the room here in a second. Ari, you should grab a mic. Is this a big effing deal or big effing deal? Someone else got a sandwich other than Adam Hill. It's brought to you by Jackson's Bar and Grill. Got prime rib Mondays, 6020 West Flamingo, $16 for the 1 pound prime rib, baked potato, veggies, all the fixings. I always tell you, get the big cup, the bucket of au jus. Love it. Ribeye special. It's good 7 days a week. That's why they're on the web, Jackson's Bar and Grill at beststeakdeal.com. $14 for the 10-ouncer, $16 for the 1-pounder. And if you don't want a steak, go with the ribeye burgers. Not just a regular burger, no ground chuck, ribeye. You get the fajita burger, jalapeno fire, atomic, poutine, or just get a plain cheeseburger. It's a ribeye burger. All right, around the room, Ari, this is a big effing deal, right?
What's the big deal?
Okay, maybe he's saying no. Not going to speak with the mic.
I don't think he gets the game.
Yeah, I don't think he does either.
I get it.
You don't want a sandwich?
Sure, a sandwich is cool.
If you're legendary, Adam Hill, and you're around that building all the time, you don't deserve a sandwich?
All last year, all I got to hear about was the gummy bears.
Yeah, but I never got credit really for it.
You do around my... All I hear about is Adam Hill gets the gummy bears.
I'm happy about
now the true colors are showing here. Ari's like, yeah, I kind of hate this guy. I'm glad he didn't get the sandwich. All right, so Ari says... Not a big deal. It's a gigantic deal.
Okay.
And Adam clearly knows it's a gigantic deal as well.
No, I will say this is a big effing deal. However, I'm not giving Arash that satisfaction, so big effing deal.
Cofield and Company is brought to you by Jackson's Bar Grill and Gaming, where you can get the best steak deals in Las Vegas. Check it out, beststeakdeal.com.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas with Steve Cofield and Adam Hill.
And you're from New York, man.
Representing NYC to the fullest. Gats up, Caleb. Heads be ducking in New York. Be busting. Take that.
Welcome to New York, mother. We don't play, and out of towners get got like every day.
There's Donald. Airing it out. Deep ball. Separation. Caught. Robbie Anderson. Goodbye. Touchdown, Jets.
You can spot us out of town by the way that we walk, the way that we talk.
All right, I needed that. After the Yankees game last night, little Sammy D to Robbie. Let's do it. Crank it up.
Queens, Manhattan, Staten, uptown, what now? Let's make it happen. New York, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
He didn't crank it up. All right, Caleb Herrig is with us. What's up, Caleb?
What's up? Apparently New York comes up.
could you do that song at karaoke?
No, I cannot. Being from California, I think it's against my religion somehow to do that.
Go California Love?
Yeah, I can do California Love all day.
Okay. Definitely the Tupac verse is better, though.
For sure it is. Okay. Definitely.
Just making sure.
We're going to talk quarterbacks today. We're going to get to UNLV football. Caleb Herring's with us, radio analyst for the Rebels. How much of these guys in the NFL have you watched between Josh Allen and Mayfield and Josh Rosen and the guy we just heard, Sam Darnold?
I've watched a little bit of each of them. I would have analyzed them completely, but I've watched a little bit. I know Allen for sure has been catching a lot of people's eye, getting some attention up in Buffalo, but he's definitely a risky kind of player, not just throwing the ball, but he's taking off on some of those runs. But he's bringing some excitement up in Buffalo. I think Rosen's pretty much having the toughest go of all the rookies, and it's mostly because of what he has to work with around him. I mean, the Cardinals just aren't very good, and then he's not able to do very much other than stay alive back there. So,
who do you like more, Darnold or Mayfield so far?
So far, I honestly, I got to say I like Mayfield. I think Mayfield is proving why he was the number one pick so far this year. It's not just, you know, his arm talent or anything like that. It's his command out there on the field. He seems to have gotten a grasp of the playbook really quickly, and he's not rattled at all by some of the tough situations that he's been in. Now, he's turned the ball over. He's been risky with it, which is kind of the same knock that Darnold had coming out of the draft, but Mayfield, just his command out there on the field and his level of comfort in these tough situations. They've been in some, every game he's played in so far has been a nail biter. I mean, he's not, at least as a starter, and even when he came off the bench, it was a close game, and putting him in some situations where he had to really be the leader, and he looks completely comfortable in those situations. So I to his credit, that's huge as a rookie to be able to do that.
I'll go specifically on Mayfield. In the Raiders game, he lost the Raiders game for him. He was the reason they lost, and it was because they get a big lead, and then he still tries to play the same way he's playing and starts turning the ball over and letting the Raiders back in it. So is that on him, or is that on the coaching staff to change the plays, change the calls, and just tell him, hey, you're up big now. Stop with the nonsense. Just play conservative.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the coaches in that situation expect you as a player, the leadership, the veteran, to kind of have the maturity to understand, hey, I might call this play, but you don't have to throw. You can make a better decision. You can always throw the check down. You can always throw it away, let the fight nose down. We can punt it away even instead of throwing interceptions. Similar to what kind of Gruden was going through with Carr this past week with the interception on that first down pass down on the 1 yard line. So it's kind of saying that you call a play as a coach and you anticipate that your player will execute, you know, what you kind of think is going to be on based on the situation, down distance and the scoreboard. So yeah, in essence, it was kind of on Mayfield making those risky decisions, throwing it downfield up into double covers and stuff like that when you had the lead and left the door open for the Raiders a couple weeks ago. So yeah, I definitely think there's some blame on both sides. I think the coaches have to realize that he is still a rookie, and it's a KYP situation. Know your personnel. This is who Baker Mayfield is, and this is why people loved him coming out of the draft, because he is a kind of a gunslinger in the line of Brett Favre, so to speak. In some ways, he's going to take chances with the ball. More often than not, he's going to be right, but when he's wrong, it does come back to hurt you.
Caleb Herring's with us for the next 10 minutes or so. Back tomorrow night. Coach's show, Tony Sanchez, radio show go down at Born and Raised. So I'm sure you got it the last 3 days. The question, hey, Caleb, how did that just happen? What happened to the Rebels against New Mexico? What do you say?
It's unexplainable. I don't think there is an explanation. I think it's best left at that. It's just something that you don't have an excuse for. There's no rhyme or reason. Of course, you can. It'd be different if you could look back and say, well, Max Gillum threw 4 interceptions, and, you know, the pass game looked terrible. He couldn't complete a pass, da da da. I mean, it was true. They did look terrible on offense. Max didn't look particularly good. But it would be different if that was the sole reason and UNLV lost in a nail-biter because the second-string quarterback couldn't come through. That's a totally different, more acceptable way to lose a game if there is an acceptable way. But the fact that they absolutely got dominated, the fact that the run game was non-existent for most of the game, if not all of the game, and New Mexico, who is not a Power 5 team, who is not even projected to finish at the top of the conference this year, comes to your home field after a bye week and just runs all over you. That's unexplainable. And I think the best explanation is that it's unexplainable, if that makes any sense.
I want to focus on offense, and I've said this a bunch, but I'll let you address this because I saw a bunch of people saying it the other day. Just because you switch quarterbacks doesn't mean anything to the running game. It's insane, but what would you say to those people?
I would say that they haven't been tuned in fully to the schematics of UNLV's offense, because Armani Rogers definitely contributes not only himself, but in opening up a lot of the running lanes. That it's a fractional separation that he creates, but it's enough for guys like Lex to get their own space and create in the running game for themselves. So when you have Armani, the zone read is a legitimate thing where one at least, but two defenders a lot of the times are concerned with whether or not Armani Rogers actually has the ball or if he did hand it off. And that split second of delay allows a cutback lane for Lexington and Thomas. Now, you saw in the game when Max Gillum tries to run the zone read option, there's not a single defender whose head even turns to check if he's running it. They're almost assuming that if he does have it, we'll turn around, we'll catch up, and it won't be that bad. You do that with Armani, he's gone 60 yards, and we've seen it a lot this year. Also, in pass situations, when the pocket breaks down, Max just didn't have time to throw. He's trying to throw in pressure, getting hit as he throws, taking sacks. Those plays with Armani turn into at least an attempt at a rush where he gets maybe 5 yards and gets tripped up. Or we've seen him on third down, obvious passing situations, convert with his legs on third and 10, which is a valuable asset to have. And that counts towards your rushing game. So, no, I mean, a change at quarterback definitely changes things. And it's not just for UNLV. There's, like, other teams in history. Colin Kaepernick, for instance, at UNR and in the professional league and in the NFL, when he wasn't on the field, the running game took a hit. And it's just the nature of the offensive system.
Caleb Herring's with us. What do you think is going on with Tony Sanchez and judging the running backs right now? And Lexington Thomas has had such a good career, but it sounds like he's not happy with how hard Lex is running.
I have some mixed emotions about this, and Tony's talked about it a lot this season. I think he was frustrated enough with the game and the way that things were going, and I think Lex, there was more expected of Lex, being that you can kind of read between the lines based on what he said and being talked to in the press so far this week, that guys around Max had to step up. And I think he wanted that to happen so that Max could perform better. The offense needed it so that they can actually get some production. So he expected other people around, namely Lex being the other featured star on the offense outside of Armani Rogers, to step up and really play with another level of intensity to make up, I guess, for the difference of not having Armani. So that frustration of that not bearing out on the field and the offense just not being able to get anything going, I think he did I don't want to say lose his temper or something like that, because I think it was necessary to challenge the players. I think nobody's off the hook for what they did last Saturday. But I think if he could do it again, he probably wouldn't have named a name. I think he wouldn't have singled out a guy. So I think that's the only area. But I think Lex, like you said, has had a great career. He's always run hard. He's made a name for running through the first tackle and breaking tackles in the second level and really putting that second effort in to make those runs long and stretch down the field and make big plays for the Rebels. I think Coach Sanchez expected more for him in the absence of the starting quarterback, and he didn't get it. I know there was a couple of times on the sideline where he thought Lex turned down some contact and stepped out of bounds, where he may have fought for extra yards in any other situation. But Lexington was not the only reason that the Rebels didn't succeed. He had six attempts for 36 yards, which is not Lex-like at all. But I don't think this was Coach Sanchez's intent, was to put anything all on Lex solely. He was just trying to challenge one of his senior leaders and the offensive leader without Armani on the field to do better. And I think Lex, being mature and, like we said, a senior, he should respond this week with some more effort and some more Lexington-like runs.
The O-line didn't do Max Gillum any favors either. You pointed out during the game, because there are a bunch of high snaps, that it seemed like Sitakosa was having trouble just going from the 6'6 quarterback to the 6'2 quarterback. So get into that. And also, when you're a quarterback and you play the position, with all that's going on, all of a sudden you have to worry about the snap being in the right spot. I mean, that's got to start freaking you out.
It does. I think the snap exchange situation, out of shotgun especially, the room for error when you have a 6'6 quarterback whose catch radius is a lot wider, right? Armani's taller. He can reach left and right a little better, maybe more agile, athletic, so he can actually adjust and and still catch the ball and make some plays with it after he can. We've seen it a couple times for Monty actually this season where there's been a bad snap and he scoops it up and takes it in for a touchdown or makes a play out of nothing. So we've already seen that from him. But the room for error shrinks a little bit when that catch radius shrinks and we have a smaller quarterback back there. Not only that, but Max's first D1 start, you want as little for him to think about as possible. Not only does he have to make the reads on the coverage, but now he has to spend more of his brain power focusing on whether or not the snap's going to come directly to his hands or if he's going to have to jump for it. So that definitely affected the game in a lot of ways, in my opinion. And so it's something that you got to adjust to. And you hate for Max to have to do that. But the offensive line, on top of that, just didn't really do a great job of establishing any sort of presence in the run game. So not only did Max have to worry about snaps and worry about reading coverages, but then he didn't have you just put Max in probably the worst situation he could have been in his first Division I start. And you kind of feel for him in that aspect. Like, there's really nothing much he could have done to change the outcome of that game. Although he did try to have, you know, a turnaround in the fourth quarter and complete some passes and a couple of touchdowns, but by then it was too little too late.
What can they do to help him? I mean, he's got to, you know, they've got to go back out there and play, and you know, they do have options as far as potentially Oblad. He can play four games without burning the red shirt, but what do they do to come back from that?
I mean, the only answer that you can say, if this is assuming, I guess, that the run game is going to be what it was last week for the rest of the season, which I don't think is going to be the case. I think they get back to running the ball better. I think they made an attempt this last game to try to throw some bubble screens and stuff like that, which was the right thing to do. They just didn't connect, and it looked like they've never done it before when they tried to complete some of those bubble screens. So I mean, I don't know if they can work that more this week, if they can try to be more effective in that area. But first of all, they got to reestablish the run game. I think that without that, UNLV, regardless, if Armani comes back even, if they don't have the run game reestablished, they're not going to do anything offensively once again. And I think on top of that, they need to have some semblance of a quick game. I think UNLV right now, it's run or deep pass. And I don't think they have really a quick game where it's the quarterback just finds a soft coverage and throws a simple hitch route. I think when they did try to do that, it was predictable. The defense was ready for it, and they had everybody covered in a shallow route. But they need to find a way to get a quick game going if they want to help Max perform better, because it just needs to be easier for him to make decisions and just throw the ball. It shouldn't be all down the field shots or all vertical routes. It should be some semblance of a quick game where he's getting the ball out of his hands and helping the O-line not have to protect as long. And then, like I said, getting the run game back going. That's pretty much what they have to do offensively.
Last one, Caleb, and we'll talk about all this and more tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Tony Sanchez radio show, an hour on UNLV football, a little bit of looking back in New Mexico, looking ahead to Utah State. I thought the defense sort of got frustrated and lost its concentration because the offense was performing poorly. And then you try to explain to the audience, because we touched on it a little bit on the coach's show last week, the difficulty of the defensive backs simply finding the ball when the ball is thrown up top.
It's one of the most frustrating. First of all, yeah, the defense did get frustrated and they were exhausted. It's frustrating as a defense to watch your offense struggle to move the ball, much in the same way that it's frustrating for an offense that's really good, like a high-powered offense, to stay on the sideline and watch their defense get, you know, a 15-play drive put up on them, and they're standing on the sideline cold. It's the same thing, but just in reverse. The defense, when they're on the field too long and they feel like their offense isn't helping them out, it's happened time and time again where the defense kind of loses some confidence and starts to get frustrated, and I think that was the case last Saturday. But the secondary, playing the ball, it's one thing to be in position to make a defensive play, and there's a lot of guys that are good at getting in position and being in the right spot. The next step that you have to take as a player is to be able to make a play on the ball, especially in the secondary. Like, even for wide receivers, it's an art to be able to go up and time the ball, get it at a tight point. As a defender, it's an art also to be able to know when to look back for the ball, to know when the route's done, when the ball should be in the air, and then to go up and make a play, either breaking the receiver's hands or just batting the ball down. And UNLV's secondary just didn't look like they've done it very much. They don't look like they have the confidence, or they've taken that step in their development as players individually to where they feel confident in turning around and playing the ball. They're comfortable just being there. And in a lot of cases last week and throughout this season, just being there hasn't been enough because they've been going up against some talented receivers and a quarterback that puts the ball where it needs to be. And just being there, you get jumped all over, and they come down with the ball for touchdowns and big gains. So I think that's one area of concern that Coach Sanchez has mentioned, and that the defense has to get better at the next step, not just being in position, but going up and making a play on the ball.
All right, Caleb, we appreciate a couple minutes. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback, frustrated like many with the loss against New Mexico. Up next, very tough game at Utah State this weekend, 1 o'clock start. We'll have our pregame locally here at 11:30 tomorrow night. An hour of UNLV football talk, Tony Sanchez radio show. We'll get to what's trending, and we actually are expecting Marvin Menzies to join us in studio here in just a little bit.